From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, a federal judge in New York goes after Christian healthcare providers. President Trump begins to exit the Paris Climate Accord. Why population control is not a biblical value, and the importance of faith-based adoption. I'm Rob Jorgensen, sitting in for David Salkeld, who's recovering this week from a medical procedure. I know he'd appreciate it if you'd be in prayer for him as he recovers. On Wednesday, a federal judge voided the Trump administration's conscience rule that allowed healthcare providers to opt out of medical procedures that they disagreed with based on religious or moral grounds. Here to talk about the decision with Family Research Council President Tony Perkins is Dr. Roger Marshall, a medical doctor and Republican congressman from Kansas.
Dr. Marshall, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thanks for having me back on. It's just another day that our freedoms, our values are being attacked, our constitutional freedoms being attacked. Why is it that everyone's freedoms are protected except Christians? Why are we being persecuted like this in today's world?
Well, I want to address this as a healthcare provider. I mean, you spent you're really on your second career after serving as a doctor, as I mentioned, delivered over 5,000 babies. I mean, this almost what we're seeing increasingly, and it's not just in medical. I mean, I'm going to talk a little bit later about the adoption agencies, but medical in particular. I mean, are medical providers, you know, mindless bots without moral concerns or constraints? I mean, are they to do what they're told to do by the patient?
Well, of course not. We're people as well. And, you know, I chose a residency program so that it did not do abortions. So I wouldn't have these types of pressures having to deal with it on a day in and day out basis. But unfortunately, not every nurse and every physician gets to work in a location that doesn't do those types of procedures. And more, it's just on abortions, it's sterilization procedures, it's sex change type of procedures that a healthcare worker may object to say, look, I don't think that this is morally right. And President Trump was trying to help us out here and give us some more protections. But now one of the Obama-era judges has basically torn that up and thrown it away and said, no, we're not going to give Christians the same type of rights and protections as other people are.
It's just fascinating to me. Every action this president takes, you have a district-level judge that is stepping in to enjoin and stay these policies nationwide.
Right, Tony. There's a theme here. Under President Obama's administrations, our values, our freedoms as Christians were being attacked constantly. Then President Obama nominates liberal judges, and now President Trump is trying to undo those rules. And thank goodness President Trump, I believe, has confirmed now 158 conservative judges. That's really important. But meanwhile, you and I, FRC, and our staffs are going to have to get to work and figure out some legislation to protect Christians who want to practice medicine, whether it's nurses or doctors or surgical techs, those types of folks as well.
Dr. Marshall, give our listeners just kind of a sense as a medical professional, a medical provider, the type of things that medical personnel might be forced into. You mentioned you chose a residency program that did not include abortions. But what if they came to you and said, if you want to pass and you want to become a doctor, you're going to have to perform an abortion?
Right. So most residency programs teach residents how to do abortions. And many of the national organizations are requiring them to do that. So there's more and more pressure to learn those types of procedures. And I got to tell you, what I'm really concerned about now is all this sex change. That was really uncommon when I was going to medical school and in training. But there seems to be more and more pressure for doctors to be performing sex change operations and even on minors. So we better be careful here. This is indeed one of those slippery slopes.
And when you talk, Congressman Marshall, about the slippery slope, one of my big concerns, and my daughter is actually a nurse, but she went through a Catholic, a faith-based school, university, and is working in a faith-based hospital. But my concern is that if we do not provide protections for people of moral conviction, that they will choose another profession. And that so we will lose out on having kind, compassionate, caring people motivated by their faith from working in these critical fields.
You know, exactly. And unfortunately, more and more healthcare providers are being bullied into doing these types of procedures. And what the president was trying to do was give us some of those protections. So there's enough pressures to not become a doctor or a nurse right now because of Obamacare and all the regulations and all those things going on. We don't need a moral fiber keeping us from doing it as well. So that would be a sad, sad day. Very sad.
Dr. Marshall, you mentioned the issue of sex change and LGBT issues. One of the articles I read about this said critics have said that the rule could deprive gay, transgender, and other patients of needed health care because some providers might deem them less worthy of treatment. I've never heard of a case, and I want to ask you if you have, encountered where someone was denied medically necessary treatment because of their orientation or anything of that nature.
Of course not. I couldn't even imagine being in an emergency room and asking a patient what their religion was, what their sexual orientation was. I mean, I want to know, do you smoke? Do you, what your allergies are? Do you, what medical problems do you have? And it would just be real unusual for that to become an issue in any way, unless it puts you at some increased risk for certain health problems. So, of course not. I'm just flabbergasted, to be honest, just absolutely flabbergasted. If it's an urgent treatment, we're going to take care of you. In the emergency room, you call us. I mean, just think of all these great doctors and nurses who have dedicated their lives out here across America, and now there's one more reason to not become a doctor, not to become a nurse.
And those are the very people we want in these professions, people who are motivated not for a paycheck, that are motivated out of a compassion for their fellow human being that is deeply rooted, really, in their faith. I know that's why my daughter chose that profession. And so I think it's extremely important that we protect the very thing that is leading men and women into this critical area of service.
You know, absolutely. Next to salvation and the message of salvation, I think one of the greatest things a Christian can do is to use the talents that God has given us to be in the healthcare field. That God has given me certain talents and certain opportunities, and how can I use that? And how can I involve my faith for better outcomes and praying with people and all those things that I think a strong Christian doctor and nurse help bring to the healing situation, way more than just a scalpel and some medicines.
All right, Dr. Roger Marshall, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to continue to draw focus to this because I think it is a critical issue for both patients and for healthcare providers. Thanks so much for taking time out to join us.
Absolutely, Tony. We'll keep fighting the fight together. Thanks so much for keep highlighting all these issues.
You can find out more about Congressman Marshall when you visit tonyperkins.com. While you're there, you can also find out how you can receive Tony's daily update. It's a daily email with the top stories concerning faith, family, and freedom. Again, that's tonyperkins.com.
Sexual sin can be difficult to discuss in the church, but it must be addressed. To help inform this conversation, FRC has a new publication for church leaders called Safeguard Your Ministry for Moral Failure. In it, Dr. Jesse Gill, a licensed psychologist, discusses contributing factors to moral failure, a practical understanding of our sexual nature, and a call for Christian leaders to increase their dependency on Christ. This publication is a must-read for everyone involved in ministry. To learn more, visit frc.org/safeguard.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm Rob Jorgensen, sitting in for David Salkeld. Earlier this week, the president announced that he would begin the process of withdrawing the U.S. from the Paris Climate Accord. Joining FRC President Tony Perkins to talk about the move is Jody Arrington, congressman from the 19th District of Texas.
Congressman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, good to be with you. And for those who don't know where Texas 19 is, it's a little slice of heaven out here in West Texas.
Yes, it's a little warm out there, too, most times.
Yes, it is. But we are the food, fuel, and fiber capital of the world. So when we talk about energy and agriculture, fueling this economy, and feeding and clothing the American people, it's really the hardworking, God-fearing people, mainly in rural America, that are doing that. It's a huge blessing for our country, both food security and energy independence, that we get and we are blessed with as a nation because of the folks out in places like West Texas and rural parts around the country.
It is directly linked to the standard of living of Americans and the many people around the world who benefit. When America does well, other countries benefit from it. And you compare the standard of living, the increase in that standard of living over the last 50 years, 75 years, 100 years, and it's remarkable. But at the same time, and Jody, this is what is often left, I mentioned this in the open, is that through our technology, the same technology that's helping us increase the return on our investment or the productivity of our farms, the same American ingenuity is helping us reduce emissions and pollution.
No question about it. America leads the way in energy-efficient technologies and innovations. The shale revolution that came about because of horizontal fracking has created a situation where we are exceeding the goals and objectives of some Paris Agreement, which is nothing more than political window dressing. Tony, by the year 2100, if everybody complied with their target emission reductions, we would see 0.1% of a degree in Fahrenheit. I mean, it's de minimis on the merits of this deal. And unfortunately, with far less time, 5 years, we'd lose millions of jobs and it would cost billions of dollars, most of which would be borne by middle and working class people who are living paycheck to paycheck. But yes, it's innovation that has created this situation where America's leading in carbon and greenhouse gas emissions, not command and control, Washington knows best, regulations. And that's the irony of all of this. But I know your listeners know better.
Well, it's a good point to continually drive home, because the gain that they say that we will experience, it will be impossible to measure, but the pain that will be imposed as a result of this will be evident, as you pointed out, to those who in the middle class, those who are working to provide for their families. That's where the pain will be felt most intensely.
No question, whether it's at the pump with gasoline, whether it's at their home with their heating and air conditioning bills, this tax would be passed along to folks who again, the vast majority are living paycheck to paycheck. Fortunately, with more free market policies like the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and the deregulation that's happening because of a free market minded president, our right. Economy's growing, people have more opportunities, and this would just take us a major step backwards. And oh, by the way, while it does all of that damage to the American economy and the American working class families, it would give a pass to China, Russia, and India.
I know. That's what's crazy about this. And they're the ones that are polluting more than anybody, especially China, with continuing to expand their coal-powered plants and not clean technology like we're using here in the United States. Congressman, we're out of time. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for leading on this effort.
You bet, Tony. God bless.
You can find out more about Jody Arrington when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'll be back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
What is the Bible's stance on religious liberty? In FRC's new publication titled Biblical Principles for Religious Liberty, Evidence from Scripture and Church History, author David Clawson addresses this question by presenting key biblical and theological arguments for why religious liberty is worth defending and encourages Christians to stand up for America's first freedom. Learn more by visiting frc.org/belief.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm Rob Jorgensen, sitting in for David Salkeld. Many leftists in academia, and now even Democratic presidential candidates, are calling for population control as a way of battling climate change. Joining Tony to talk about the topic from a biblical worldview is David Clawson, FRC's Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview.
David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, the reason I want to bring this up is because on the heels of the withdrawal from the Paris Agreement, we had more than 11,000 quote-unquote experts from around the world that are calling for a critical addition to the main strategy of the climate change people of dumping fossil fuels, in going to windmills and electric cars and all of that. They also are now openly admitting there needs to be far fewer humans on the planet. And I said this 14, 15 years ago in a book, Personal Faith, Public Policy. This was a key element of the – at that time it was called global warming. Now it's climate change. Population control is a key part of what they're pushing for.
No, you're absolutely right. And you pointed that out in your book, your 2008 book, actually, Personal Faith and Public Policy. But we've heard these calls before. All the way back in 1798, it was Thomas Malthus. He was saying that we need to limit the population because the world wasn't going to be able to feed this growing population. When he made that argument, I think world population was about a billion people. Today, it stands at 7.7 billion people. But I think, and you've talked about this before, but there really is a broader point here. And we've seen this time and time again throughout history, especially here in the United States, that calls for limiting the population have often been code for advancing radical left-wing movements. We've seen this before.
But it also stands in – yes, there's no question about that. It does. But for a Christian – a clear warning sign should be anything that stands in contradiction to Scripture. Now, God said in Genesis to be fruitful and multiply. Now, I've read that in English and I've gone back to look at the Hebrew. I don't see any expiration date attached to that, that somehow only applied to certain people. And David talked about how children are the reward. They're a blessing from God. Blessed is a man who's the warrior whose quiver is full. I mean, the Scripture does not see children as a burden that are consuming limited resources. To the contrary, Jesus said, don't forbid the children from come unto me. I mean, the children are a blessing. Jesus saw them as a blessing. God saw them as a blessing. We, too, should see them as a blessing.
Absolutely. And it is unfortunate, but the language that's used, whether it's the climate, these environmental activists are saying that, whenever they talk about children children are just consumers rather than blessings to be received. But as Christians, we do want to think through this carefully. We want to think through the claims of the environmentalist from a biblical worldview. And the Bible does speak to this. I think there's two theological truths that we should think about as Christians. One is what I call through the category of dominion. The Bible teaches that when God created the world, He created human beings in His image, and He did charge them to exercise dominion by multiplying, by filling the earth. And this is how human flourishing is really produced. But secondly, the Bible does talk about stewardship.
Right.
The earth and its resources do hold more than just instrumental value. And Christians are called to exercise stewardship over creation because, we don't own the earth. God does. And we're supposed to tend and cultivate God's earth. So we need to hold both of those, dominion and stewardship, together.
You can find out more about David Clawson, as well as the efforts of Family Research Council in the area of biblical worldview, when you visit tonyperkins.com.
Abortion is one of the most combative moral and political questions in America today, even among Christians. there's been a renewed effort in theological liberal Christian circles to argue that the Bible does not oppose abortion. In FRC's new publication titled Biblical Principles for Pro-Life Engagement, Personhood, Scripture, and Church History, author David Clausen examines relevant passages in the Bible that inform how a Christian should think about abortion. Learn more by visiting frc.org/unborn.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm Rob Jorgensen, sitting in for David Salkeld this week. Recently, there's been a lot of pushback from the left on whether faith-based adoption agencies should have the right to honor their moral and religious convictions in the placement of children. Joining Tony Perkins with a firsthand account of the process is FRC's Senior Vice President and Chief of Staff, Harold Harper.
Harold, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, you're a frequent listener, so now you're a frequent guest. You've been on many times, but let's talk about this. I want to, from your standpoint, as you your family pursued an adoption and going through a faith-based, I mean, you were motivated out of your faith.
Absolutely. We were motivated by our church, our local church. You know, our pastor spoke on this. Our church was really big on challenging all of us to step out, obey God. He invited Stephen Curtis and Mary Beth Chapman to come and speak to our ladies at our church. It was a ladies' event. And many of our listeners probably know about that horrific story where they lost one of their adopted children in an accident. And it was the first time that Mary Beth was working on her book at the time. She was about to go on tour and promote the book. She came and spoke at our church. My wife was there. And she came home that night just moved because Mary Beth shared, you know, the whole story about how God had called them to adoption, the need over in China, their ministry of Show Hope. And it basically, Donna said when she came home, how could any mother not be moved, you know, sitting in the congregation of all these children that don't have a mom to care for them, especially in China, they call any child that has any kind of a medical need a special needs child. And so there's children over there that need medical attention. And so she came home that night and said, you wouldn't be open to adding another child to our family. And she asked me that because for years when they were little and just in the terrible twos and threes, I just said I didn't want any more children. And so, but she clearly, the Lord had spoken to her. I could see it in her eyes. I could see it in her face. And I said, absolutely. And then she started crying because of the reality that God was calling us into something that was way out of our comfort zone. But our church and the incredible faith-based organizations were right there to walk us through what God was clearly calling us to do. And I remember our pastor from the pulpit, and I think about this, there have been many stories of pastors in the pulpit. Matter of fact, we had clips of David Platt on recently. I remember when he was pastoring in Birmingham, I think there was 140 foster children that needed to be placed. And David just presented that need to the church. And I think within a couple of weeks, all of those foster children were adopted or taken in to homes. And so I think there are enough children in need that every adoption agency should be allowed to help place these children.
I mean, what would happen is if all of these faith-based adoption agencies were put out of business, which appears to be the desire of the left, either to surrender their distinctiveness of being motivated by their faith, which, you know, a pastor, a church that is going to partner with some of these adoption agencies and promote foster care or adoption, they're going to do it out of their faith. And so they want to be able to communicate with an entity that understands, respects, and will honor that faith.
Right. I when you look at some of the stats out there, evangelicals are five times more likely in the general population to adopt. And Catholics, Catholic families are three times more likely to adopt. So faith-based adoption is very important. Faith-based entities, you know, to go through this and to understand as a Christian, as a man of faith, a family of faith, you know, we needed to walk through this prayerfully, and we needed faith-based organizations to help us. And there were multiple ones. Our our home study was done by a Catholic charity that mm-hmm. walked us through. Right. So, and then
they do a lot of work on that.
And even in the foster facility that Josiah was in China when he was sick and ill, was run by a Mormon woman. Another, you know, here's a lady that went over there to teach English to children, saw the need, and started taking these children in her home. I'm forever grateful for Amanda, who went into one of these orphanages, saw Josiah sick, and said, "Can I take care of him tonight?" And because of her connections in her faith community, medicine was sent and all the resources were sent. She took in several children and cared for him. She gave him great care and detailed medical records so that when our time came at 2, when we went over there, we just continue that. He's had 18 surgeries. You know, can you imagine a child in need not having, not allowing a faith-based community or agency to help place these children who are in need?
Harold, how has the adoption of Josiah and bringing him into your family impacted your family?
Oh, tremendously. You know, we took our entire family. We took our two children. We even took my sister-in-law over there, and Josiah immediately bonded with the entire family. But our oldest son said, and Hannah has said this to our daughter, the most significant thing we've ever done as a family. Well, you know, when you look back and you talk about this, you talk about it personally, you talk about it on the radio, just about making a difference, wanting, you know, you don't want to just, you want everything that you do in your work and your ministry to make a difference. That was a significant spiritual marker in all of our lives, because you really feel the hands and feet of Jesus when you're going just that one child. And God's got huge plans for Josiah. He's an incredible, incredible young man.
He certainly is. He certainly is. And we're glad to have him as a part of the extended FRC family. Harold, thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm Rob Jorgensen, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.